The Morning Brew Podcast with Jaffe and Razor, sponsored by Berkshire Bank Home Lending, where you borrow matters. So I guess the home winning streak is officially over, but it really isn't as far as I'm concerned. I know it is technically, but it's not a regulation loss, so you still get a point. I'm not going to get caught up in technicalities as we welcome you in with Morning Brew with Jaffe and Razor, presented by Berkshire Bank. And this episode is also made possible by Sparks and by Apex, and we will talk about them a little bit later in the show. And this isn't sour grapes. It's a shootout loss. BFD, Razor. That's really what it comes down to. After the Bruins are down 3-0, they come back and really what ended up becoming a wonderful game. And they're 14-0-1 now at home. But I know the winning streak is over, but I sure as shit don't feel bummed about it. Do you? You feel bummed about it at all?
Oh, no. No. It feels closer to a win than it does to a loss. If that makes any sense, with the shootout and the comeback. You know, if you lose in overtime, you lose 3-on-3, then that's different, certainly. So, no big deal. Got a point out of a game that didn't look like you were going to get a point out of for, you know, 3 minutes into it, 4 minutes into it.
Couldn't have started any better for Bruce Cassidy. Welcome back, Butch. It's nice to talk to him for a bit. Did an interview with him yesterday, and he's in a good place. And you know, when I say I'm happy for him, meaning I'm happy that he landed in a great spot. His family now is settled. All that. His team came out fired up. They did. Now they're a good first period team. They're a real good first period team, and they came out fired up. They were maybe the best team I've seen against the Bruins. Well, definitely lately, with regard to forechecking them, winning wall battles, putting them into areas of uncomfortableness, if that's a word, Razor, for the breakout. You know, they made life miserable for the Bruins. And they came out with purpose, some real good plays. And I didn't think any of the goals that were given up, the first three by Swayman, were his fault. Would you agree with that?
No, he missed his post on the first one, though, going around the net. He missed his right foot on the post, which put him behind, which didn't allow him to push off and take angle. So I don't think he was, like, perfectly sharp on that, but you're not going to blame him either.
I mean, it's a snapshot, right? I mean, it was a, you know,
Good goals. Yeah, yeah, they're good goals.
And then Bruins, the Pasta delivered a pizza to Marchessault.
Yeah, and he made a great first save on that, and the rebound you have no chance on, and bingo bango, you did feel like it was going to be one of those nights where they just couldn't get going, but they did, which is, you know, pretty impressive to fight through it again.
Well, he didn't really get going until after it was 3-0, because Cotter comes out again, scores his fourth goal of the season 51 seconds into the second period, and it's 3-0 Bruins, and you're like, oh, shit, like, okay. It didn't have doom and gloom feel in the garden, but, you know, you're like, all right, well, if it isn't their night, tip your hat, right? Tip your hat to Vegas without Petrangelo, without Jack Eichel. Kind of bummed. I wanted to see Jack Eichel play, given how, on, you know, watching games from afar, Razor, he's really played well this year. And not just the offense, it's been the defense. It's been the 200-foot game. He's played really well. He seems to have reached that maturity process, you know, point of his career. But lower body injury, had a hard time turning to one direction. And then, like, why would you do it? Why would you risk it? But anyways, they're playing really well. But then it's a goal as the Bruins start getting more and more. They get better. They kill penalties. They get better in the second period. It's a goal at the 13:46 mark by Brad Marchand. That was a really nice play upon through the neutral zone transition. Marchand ends up streaking in down the left wing side as the puck went to the right side. Carlo kind of sifted it down to Bergeron, and then Bergeron's over the crease or top of the crease pass to the streaking Marchand, made it 3-1. And did you have a feeling when that goal went in, Razor, that the game was different then? Could you get one of those vibes through the television watching it?
Not as much on the first one, certainly late in the second, but the first one you're like, oh, okay, like they were going to score. They weren't going to get shut out at home 3-0. That was kind of my thinking the whole way, but it just being down 3-0, I was still thinking all along, you can't come back from three goals again. That after the first one anyways.
Mm-hmm. How about that goal, the second goal of the game for the Bruins? Pastrnak's goal in 1935, Mark, end of the second period. I'm doing the game, with Barry, and we were both like, holy smokes. I mean, he picks the puck up off of a rim around from, so the puck gets rimmed around from the right side. McAvoy ends up rimming it around to the left wing side. Bergeron is the first forechecker, but instead of getting to the puck and stopping it, he lets it go. Whether there was verbal or nonverbal communication, don't know. Don't even care, because they've got, such great connection between Bergeron and Pastrnak. But Pastrnak's just a few feet behind him. And in one motion, he gets the puck on his backhand and then puts it into its stick blade, his toe of his stick blade, and swivels and, pivots around. And it literally, like two strides later, releases just a howitzer of a snapshot. There's no chance. I mean, it was short side that it beat Logan Thompson, right? Mm-hmm. It was like, I think even he had to say, holy shit, what just happened? How quickly did that play go from wall to shooting area to goal?
Yeah, it's crazy how every time they're on the ice, they're a threat in any situation on the ice, in any location on the ice. And that was a great example of it, how quickly they can change the game, they being Bergeron and Pasta, but certainly Pasta, where his game's at, where his level's at. It's a game changer. And then you feel the vibe after the 3-2 of, well, there's no way that they're not going to score in the third too.
Right. It was the place was going, it was going bananas after that Pasta goal. I can't, get over how, easy Razor, he made that play look. And again, Barry felt the same way. Like, that was anything but easy, but he made it look that way. And from a goalie's perspective, I got to imagine just how quickly it went from safest play to, oh my God, a goal scoring chance. I mean, it's not deception. That one there, I mean, you look at that and say, geez, Logan Thompson made a mistake. I just think he blew it by him, the quickness, the release of it.
Yeah, with David, there's no mistakes, or you're never really giving up a bad goal to pass, especially in that kind of a play as a goaltender, because to your point, it happens so quick. He shoots it so well, shoots it so fast, and there's so much confidence behind his shot. He just puts it on, he's not really picking a corner there. He puts it as hard as he can to the net, and it finds a way to go through. But no, that was, If you're a goaltender, you're upset more than anything of the timing, because now you're almost through the period 3-1, and you give that one up, and you've given up a lot of momentum as well.
I thought that Trent Frederick had another nice game. No points, but 3 shots, 2 hits. We give a lot of attention, and rightfully so. I mean, Marchand was really good in this game. Pastrnak, again, despite the egregious turnover in the first period that led to the second goal. I think he felt, look, that stuff's going to happen, right? I mean, it's just, Pasta's got the puck on his stick so much, Razor. That kind of play, unfortunately, is just going to happen when Pastrnak makes some plays, because, they do want to use middle ice for their breakouts. And I mean, it was, he didn't pick his head up to look. And so you can't slough it off, but I do think you got it. Don't you have to say a little bit, hey, that shit's going to happen once in a while?
Yeah, and it just hasn't happened this year. That's why this team's been so good. That's the play that we have. I bet we could count it on one hand the amount of times we've seen it, at least at home. And it is going to happen. That's going to happen, once a week, more frequently. As the season goes on, when some of these games don't matter quite as much, and to your point, David's got the puck all the time, and he's always trying to make plays, and yeah, you just keep scoring goals, buddy. You just keep scoring goals.
Right. Pasternak's line, by the way, for the game, and I know I was talking about Frederick a minute ago. I'll go back to Pasternak. He had a goal, 22-30, five shots, three more attempts. He had three hits. What I love, Razor, he's averaging over a hit a game. I mean, this is going to really be, and I've talked about it on air a little here. I mean, he's not chasing the physical game, but he's really relishing it. Jesus, who did he have the big? Was it White Cloud that he throttled behind the net, I think, tonight with a heavy hit in the second period? It was massive. And on the forecheck, and most of his hits are happening, you know, they're happening on the forecheck where he's saying, I'm going to help retrieve the puck. I'm not going to wait for somebody else to get it at times. I'm going to help retrieve it. And I think that is such an important element of his game. One, he's in the play. And two, I think he just continues to get a higher respect, higher regard from his teammates on that level as well.
Well, and I think it motivates his teammates. I think it's one of those, he's one of those guys now that guys look and see where he's at. What's his game going to be like? What's his day going to be like? And when he just gets on the body a little bit. He's still a big, strong kid. So he does make motion, does make energy when he runs into people out on the ice. And I think the team looks for that and sees him doing it and follows along because he's a leader.
Yeah, speaking of leaders, Patrice Bergeron had an assist in the game, played 20 and a half minutes. Another game under 50%, though, in the faceoff circle. He went 12 wins, 16 losses for 43%. Three shots on net, another four attempts, a couple blocked, one missed. He had two hits. By the Bruins, 35 hits credited to their stat sheet compared to 28 to Vegas. I thought Vegas, they looked big to me. They look big. They got some big boys up there. They got some thick guys up there. I thought that the Bruins, again, matched their physical play once they got into it. After that first period, I felt like they were able to handle it. And that's something, again, with that fourth line, Nosek, but in particular Foligno and Greer, and in some ways Trent Frederick on the third line, it just feels right now, it definitely feels that the Bruins are just more capable of handling the physical play compared to last season.
And then I would add Lindholm as well. Mm-hmm. Back on the back end, I think that size of his can offset whether, you know, and again, he's not the most physical player, but he is a physical specimen out there, and he can dwarf some of the other guys that look big to us. And yeah, they just, for what I think, they're just moving faster. Right, especially Foligno and Greer, they're moving faster. Frederick's moving faster to get in on a forecheck and be able to combat the physicality of the other teams. So at times last year, it felt like they were trying to be physical, but they just couldn't get there. So
it does look different. Yeah, you're right. They were chasing the physical play last year, maybe to try to prove to themselves, maybe try to prove to the fans that they could do it.
Maybe now they accept it. Now they're just accepting it. When it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, you know, that's okay too.
And I do think that I do think a kid like Greer has a big impact in that. And absolutely Lindholm. I mean, it's 6'4", whatever, 210 pounds or whatever. But a kid like Greer and Foligno, and you know, Greer wasn't credited with any hits, but in his 8.5 minutes or 8:15, he was impactful. Foligno, 9:15, he had two hits. Nosek had a bit of a tough first period. He had the penalty after he also put a puck to the middle of the ice. Yeah. And you can't go backhand sauce to the middle. But then again, Pasta made forehand play to the middle. But, you know, Nosek didn't like the penalty call. And I did think, and you know I don't like to, it's not even criticize, just a bitch about the officiating. I thought there were some youthful calls tonight made that were marginal at best, even both ways marginal. I mean, I'm really not sure if that was a penalty in overtime. What did they call it, a slash? I think it was.
No, jeez.
I don't think it was.
It was almost too bad because the hockey gods paid Vegas back with a terrible power play in overtime. So they got paid back. But yeah, I felt like that in Colorado. The Colorado game kind of was poor officiating. Those guys were older guys too, but it just seemed like the referees are kind of in the bit of the dog days right now too.
Yeah, this is one of those initial dog days of the year. It does start to pick up much more so right around Christmas. Everybody gets family in town. Everybody starts getting, you know, the building, like the TD Garden's always full. I mean, that's, I mean, what a place, what an energy, what a place it's been, not just winning, but the fans have obviously been into it probably because of the winning, but, you know, the crowds pick up soon and a lot of other areas around the league, and everybody gets into it for a couple of weeks and then they have a little lull again after that. I want to talk to you about what you thought of Logan Thompson, you know, a goaltender that has, I don't want to say come out of nowhere, but wasn't drafted. He's not the first goaltender to be undrafted and be successful, but here's a kid that was not supposed to be their number one. It was supposed to be Robin Leonard. I had a long talk with Chandler Stephenson about him and what he liked most about him, Razor, and he, you know, what was most impressed about him. And the kid's 6'4". I didn't realize he was that tall. He's 6'4", about 200, I think, or so, and he hunches, when I say he hunches over, he leans over a lot. He doesn't look like your stereotypical just butterfly-style goaltender where it pops him. He has a lot of athleticism to his game. But I was really impressed with him watching him live. I thought, like, he looked to me to be in command, and not that, like, I didn't think this game was a fluke from Logan Thompson. He looked like a number one to me. Is he a 1A? I don't know yet. I don't think he's had enough time, enough runway to show what he is in that regard. But if I'm Vegas, would you agree that right now I'm not concerned about my goaltending with him as my starter?
No, not at all. Not at all. You have Aiden Hill there as well, who works really hard. And, you know, just like Jeremy Swayman last year, it's February, March. Where's his legs? Where is his mental capacity to actually play an entire NHL season with the travel? And then the pressure comes at that point. But there's certainly nothing for them to be taken away. And yeah, he's a guy that people think's pretty good in the goalie world. And they have for the last few years. He dominated the AHL when he was there. He came up from Canadian University, but he was highly scouted out of Canadian University, which doesn't happen often, but everyone was going to look at him, and there was differing views on his personality at times. But at the end of the day, he's a talented kid. And like you said, very athletic, very new-age NHL goaltender. So Vegas is in a better place with him than they would be with Robin Leonard.
I was just about to ask you that.
Yeah.
Chandler Stephenson said that he thinks that his best quality, besides being athletic and good size, he said, is his ability to wait out shooters. He's in control, he said, you know, when there, you know, and he is really has an uncanny knack. And I mean, he was obviously that way in the shootout, you know. I mean, he was on, there was a post by Jake DeBrusk. There's no doubt about it, that you get lucky sometimes as a goalie. But the mindset of a goalie in the shootout, after each shooter, what do? You just clear your head again? You look to see who, I mean, you think you have a little bit of a book on that guy? You hope you do that's coming in? What's the process when you go through it?
Yeah, you have a book on everybody. You'll watch video of all the guys that before every game, that of their last five shootout moves, and you get, there's lots of tendencies. It is pretty helpful, the video and the shootouts. But what's interesting with him is he's a full right, and I think he threw that. That's the one time when you talk about goalies that catch the other way. Shootouts are the most advantageous time, because shooters have Charlie Coyle pulls it, goes up and over the glove, right? Jake DeBrusk has that same glove. He looks to where he goes backhand. Brad Marchand comes in as fast as he can, either shoots it or he fakes and goes around him backhand. But all of that changes a little bit when the goalie catches the wrong way or the other way. So I think it does throw guys for a loop on the shootouts, and I thought it did for the Bruins. Just because they're not in that same routine shooting over the glove, they now have to shoot over the blocker or vice versa. But again, the kid's very confident and very assured of himself. He's very similar to Swayman in that way, in a young goalie with confidence and I'm a number one moxie, and he showed it in that game, the entire game, to come into the Garden and play the way he did and then win the shootout.
Yeah, I was impressed, really impressed. And, you know, this is a team that, they obviously have some injuries right now to Eichel and somebody else, and then Petrangelo's out with a personal situation. They're hoping he's back soon. But because of the whole salary cap thing there too, like, I don't think they need to worry about this right now. I think that wouldn't be my primary focal point, you know, for this team. And I think,
no.
I think it's a pretty good team, actually, when all, and especially that division. I think they have a pretty good chance out there. But I don't want to go on and on about Vegas. I wanted to get your take on Logan Thompson, just because I thought he was our number one star of the game. I know in the building he wasn't, but that's, you know, neither here nor there. Taylor Hall was the star of the game in the building, and I'd like to talk about him in a minute, and then I would like to talk about Bruce Cassidy for a minute too. But first, let's just thank our sponsors. As always, Morning Brew, as we said, presented by Berkshire Bank. Please check out Berkshire Bank and all the great products they have. But also Sparks Hockey and the world-famous, that's right, we're calling it the world-famous Sparks Skate Sharpener now. Go to sparkshockey.com, check out, use the code MORNINGBREW, and you'll get $50 off. But you know what? If you go on their site, to Razor, right now, they got a lot of other holiday specials, holiday deals. They got a couple of different sharpeners. They got a bounty of different wheels, so if you want to use 5/8 or a 1/2 inch or whatever, it doesn't matter. Sparks has got you covered with all the great products that they have. It always gives you a great edge. It is so reasonable. The unit will pay for itself. Check out sparkshockey.com. Check out the sharpeners and everything else there. You will not regret it. Speaking of not regretting it, you know what? You want to have some fun? Well, go to Apex. Go to Apex Entertainment in Marlboro. 100,000 square feet of fun there. All different types of games, activities. They've got full bar, a lot of great food up there too. Go have a party up there at Apex Entertainment. Or just go blow off some steam for a couple of hours and go play laser tag. Go play bumper cars. Go do, I mean, holy shit, there's so much to do at Apex Entertainment. It's up in Marlboro, just off of 495, and this is a fun place. Both Razor and I have had our kids there. We've both been there, too. We didn't have our kids there, meaning birth. We had our kids up there before. You will not regret your time up there. ApexEntertainment.com. And if you're listening out of town, Apex has got some other locations, too. Check them out. Speaking of checking out, Taylor Hall with a goal in this game. And he's the one who tied it up in the third period on the power play. It was a 5-on-3, which I didn't love the 5-on-3. I know they ended up scoring right at the end of the 5-on-4. The 5-on-3 ended. It was a 5-on-4, so they scored quickly there. I also didn't love, as you mentioned, the first unit's overtime power play. I thought they were just predictable, Razor, in that overtime, and a little slow with their passes. Kind of like, I felt like they just said, all right, we're going to score. We're just going to score. And instead of, we want to freaking score, it was, we're going to score. And they didn't. But anyways, Taylor Hall's play, I really liked how he settled it behind the net, worked its way there. He gets it over to the right elbow where Marchand is. So Taylor Hall was behind the net. When the puck bounced over there, he got it. Instead of forcing a pass, he took 1-2 stick handle, brought it back to his strong side, which is the right side where Marchand was, gave it to Marchand. Marchand made a really good read here now. He moved himself inside the dots towards the middle of the ice and brought the defense with him, never looked over at Hall either, then put the puck down to Hall on the goal line, who did the old step-out move. Great, came off the goal line, and the first save was made by Thompson. I believe it was off his pad, and it bounced back to Hall, who then roofed it. But we've already talked about former MVP and everything, but I know that Hall looked great in his year with New Jersey, right? Because he carried them. Like, he carried them. And you know who else really helped him a lot? Was Keith Kincaid. An awful lot that year in that. I just think he's in a place in his career right now that he looks so powerful the last couple of games. He doesn't look like his skating legs have not left him at all. In fact, he looks even more in control. I feel like he's almost a smarter player. He had a lot of individual skill a couple of years ago when he was MVP. No question about it. He was a force, a brute force, but he did a lot on his own. Here, I feel like he's really in sync with his teammates. And while he's not scoring 90 points, again, what is he on pace for? 60 something points? I mean, that's phenomenal.
Yeah, he seems to be at peace with that. And I think he recognizes, and he's got to an age as well where he recognizes how much fun winning is and how important winning is and just how much better life is on a daily basis when winning happens to him. And he's lost so much early in his career. So, you know, you get the sense that him going to the quote unquote third line, and just he's picked up his pace and he's made everybody better. And I don't think he's worried about any of that stuff. I think he really wants to do whatever is going to help the team the best. And I think he also recognizes, to your point, with the smartness and the confidence that he has, is that he needs to be really good on the third line for this group to win and can be consistent. And he can really do a lot from that position. And we've seen that the last few days. His game looks great. It's 200-foot game, and it's been dialed in almost nightly.
9 goals, 8 assists. He's a +4. 13 of his 17 points are even strength points. I really like that. I do. If only because, you want to succeed on the power play, but yet, we know that the Marchands, the Pasternaks, DeBrusks, or I guess, I mean, they've got guys that are going to score on the power play a lot. Hall's going to get some power play time, and he should. He's absolutely deserved it. But it might not be as much as some of the others. But the fact that he's producing so much at even strength is a great sign. And again, you start thinking ahead to the future, and you don't want to get too far ahead of yourself, but you're saying, all right, playoffs, third line, matchup scenario.
Oh, yeah.
And, with Frederick, I'll go back to him. He looks like a different player to me now. And it's not because he's scoring. He's scoring because he's moving. Like, I don't think he, it's not that he won't fight right now, Razor, but I think he was really, I remember last year, even the beginning of this year, he was talking an awful lot on the ice to other guys. He was doing a lot of, I don't want to say chirping, but it was, because I don't know if it was, I think he was worried maybe too much about that, meaning I got to be physical. I got to be, I just feel like he's skating right now. Right now, I feel like the Trent Frederick has shown straight line speed that is leading, I think, just leading to his success, and it's putting him into great spots on the ice.
Yeah, he was forcing it, right? Similar to what we talked about with the Foligno, like being too aggressive or trying to really look for hits every time they were on the ice last season. I think Frederick's the same way in his chirping and him going and fighting and a year and a half ago picking on PK Subban. He got so much hype out of that and probably stayed in the lineup for an extra couple of weeks because of that, and almost took that on as his identity when he wasn't really that.
Right. Or he didn't need to be that.
Yeah.
It's the old right if it comes to you. I mean, as a player, let me ask you as a former player, when you would see guys that would try really hard to be something, and it's not that he's afraid to fight, not at all. In fact, he still likes it and all. But when you would see guys that would get so wrapped up in trying to get to a certain identity, would you say something? Would other guys say something? Would you just be like, dude, we know that's not, you don't need to do that? I mean, how do you, if you saw it going the wrong way, what would you do, I guess?
Well, like one, the group would probably make fun and joke and have some, but at some point, one of the older guys would grab that person, that kid, and be like, hey, this play your game. Or the coaching staff, realistically, too. The coaching staff could also be involved in that, saying, it's not your game. This is why you're here. And just let's leave that. It just doesn't fit, and it's not making you better. It's simple as that. And so no, there's a lot of guys. And again, you get good positive feedback from doing it a few times when you first make it. You're doing anything to live on positive T when you first get into the NHL. So he gets that first time with PK Subban. All right, this is what I'm gonna do. This is how I get in. And then it just starts to trail off, and then you can get lost within that as well. And it feels like he's gotten through that and realized, to your point, doesn't need to fight, doesn't need to do that. If it happens, it happens. But at the end of the day, you gotta score and you gotta get points. That's how you realistically stay in the NHL.
I mean, he's playing, he's playing like he belongs. He is playing with two guys that are, bona fide NHLers. I mean, he's not playing with fringe guys between Hall and Coyle. He's playing with guys that are bringing it, and I love it because he's a wonderful kid. He's a, I think he I think he's third line. I think that's his place, and that's there's a huge need for that. And the fact that he's doing it on his off wing too, pretty impressive. Because I don't remember him playing his off wing much in the previous few years. It was always left wing, third or fourth line, and here he's getting an elevation, an opportunity, I should say, to play on that line. So good for him. Really, really good for him. It's nice to see. All right, so now the Bruins head out on the road, Razor. They're heading to Colorado. As we said, Colorado is really dinged up right now. We'll have to wait to see if Lekkonen or MacKinnon can play. Razor, you and I are scheduled to do a show after that Wednesday night game from Colorado. We felt it was necessary to do that. Then the Bruins have a day off, and then they head to Arizona State University to play the Sun Devils, a.k.a. the Arizona Coyotes, who are a little bit better than I thought they were going to be so far. I'm told, I don't know if we discussed it, but I'm told the rink is going to be fully done when the Bruins get there, meaning the ancillary, the new locker rooms, all that stuff that it needs to be done. I'm also told that the ice surface is the best in the league right now. The players are absolutely applauding it, given how it's just a hockey rink, right? It's not used a multi-sport facility all the time. The ASU team practices there. The rink is supposed to be great. So actually, I think that could help a Bruins team with how well they skate. I really do. I think it'll be advantageous for them. But yet, it's a 5,000 seat building, the Mullet Arena or Mullet Center, whatever it's called. I can't wait to see it. And then the Bruins finish off their Southwest road trip with a Sunday night game in Vegas. So they face Bruce Cassidy and the Vegas Golden Knights. Again, did you get to see the video tribute to Butch? Did you?
Yeah, it was nice.
It was nice. That was great. And you could tell he was emotionally caught up in it a little bit. And I think it's great. I think he loved the Boston Bruins as a kid. This was more than a coaching gig to him. This was probably his coaching dream. And, and he put his heart and soul into it, and he had six great years. And I thought it was very appropriate, very well done, the tribute to him.
Yeah, it was perfect. There was, I'm glad they didn't give him a 15-minute standing ovation. It was a proper amount of everything, the video, the whole thing. So I was fine with it. I think, this was his second chance, and he got it here in Boston, and I think that probably means a lot to him because he didn't really look like he was going to get another chance to coach. So,
yep, good point. After Providence, he ends up being the Bruins head coach, leads him to a Stanley Cup final. Unfortunately, still pains me to talk about it, losing to St. Louis in seven games, but then also having some other great runs, some great teams with the Bruins. And look, his team looks good, so could be interesting. I'll tell you what, a Bruins Golden Knights final would be freaking awesome. Just throwing it out there. And we need to get Nesson to send Morning Brew with Jaffe and Razor out there so we could have morning brews, afternoon brews, evening brews, and overnight, all night brews as well. Nothing done like a couple of days in Vegas. All right, we are done. Thank you for listening to this Morning Brew with Jaffe and Razor. Bruins lose in a shootout, a fifth round shootout. Riley Smith, former Bruin, scores the shootout winning goal, going 5-hole on Jeremy Swayman. Bruins 14-0-1 at home. I know they lost technically, but they didn't. And I know they didn't win either. So again, I won't get caught up in technicalities, but listen, pretty damn good coming back from being down 3-0. Thank you to Berkshire Bank, and thank you as well to Sparks and Apex. Razor and I will be back with you after the Colorado game on Wednesday, December 7th. Everybody enjoy your day. Hope you enjoyed the show, and enjoy your coffee.